from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Coming up this hour, after 20 seasons in the NFL, San Francisco 49ers wide receiver Jerry Rice retired, holding 38 league records. He won three Super Bowl rings and was a Super Bowl MVP. Oh, and he appeared in 13 Pro Bowls, too. Yep, he was that good. Well, now he's teamed up with co-author Randy O. Williams for a book. It's titled America's Game, the NFL at 100. He joins us here in the studio to talk about that, along with other things like the 49ers' 8-0 record, the league's handling of Colin Kaepernick's protest, and much more. We'll get started with Forum right after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, the name Jerry Rice is well known to any football fan. The former San Francisco 49er wide receiver played 20 seasons in the NFL, most of them for the Niners, where he won three Super Bowl rings. He's got one of them on, I can see. And he was named the most valuable player in one of those championship games. When he retired in 2005, Jerry Rice held 38 NFL records, including most touchdowns and most receptions. He was named to 13 Pro Bowls and is widely regarded as one of the best, if not perhaps the best, wide receiver to ever play the game. Now he's teamed up with writer Randy O. Williams on a new book. It is titled America's Game, the NFL at 100. Jerry Rice, welcome to Forum.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I referenced that ring. You got it on?
Yes.
It's big. Which of the three Super Bowl rings is that?
This one is Super Bowl 24 against the Denver Broncos. And I think we won that game 55-10.
Yeah, that was a blowout.
Yeah, you know, it was. We had the game pretty much under control, and that was my second one. And I get asked all the time. They say, "Are you a little bit more relaxed the second time around?" No.
The nerves, the adrenaline, you just can't control it.
No. You know, the nerves and everything that comes along with it. Not wanting to let anyone down. And when you get that opportunity, you want to win that Super Bowl.
Of course. And like, you get up in the morning and say, let's see, which of the rings am I going to put on today? Or maybe I'll put all three on.
This is so funny because, you know, I have been told, why don't you just wear all four? Because I could wear all three Super Bowl rings, then a Pro Football Hall of Fame ring. And I'm a modest guy. I can't do that.
So when you go through the airport, like, you have to take that thing off?
No, not at all.
No.
It doesn't go off.
Doesn't trigger it
doesn't
the metal detector.
There's
no diamond detector or anything. Yeah.
Nothing like that.
So I got to ask you about the 49ers. We're going to talk about your book and all that. But you were number 80, and the Niners are now 8-0. How surprised are you at how well they're doing this year?
I'm not really that surprised because – I think with Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, and also John Lynch, what they were trying to put together, the structure, it's like the old traditional San Francisco 49ers. The players had to buy into it. They had to take it to the football field. It had to come down from upstairs first. The same way it did with Eddie DeBartolo.
Meaning from the management or from God?
From management. Yeah, from management. And God. And God, too.
Okay.
Because Eddie DeBartolo, I feel one of the greatest owners to ever, you know, be in the NFL. Then you had the greatest coach with Bill Walsh. So everything just feathered down into the locker room, and I think you're starting to see that now with the San Francisco 49ers.
There was a period, of course, where the Niners kind of lost their way, and they went through a series of coaches. The ownership was, not well regarded. The management wasn't well regarded. And it seemed like the players like yourself and Ronnie Lott and Joe Montana kind of got iced out a little bit. I mean, was that the outside impression? I mean, did you guys feel a little disconnected from the team for those years?
I just think it was, with Eddie DeBartolo leaving, it was a transition. And it was probably the same thing with the new generation of the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, they have gone through some adversity. You know, they have won some games. They have lost some games. You know, Jim Harbaugh took them to the Super Bowl, ended up losing that one. And now we got Kyle Shanahan. And I think this team is just having a great time on the football field. You could see that energy. You can see that positivity. They're having fun. They're enjoying the game. And hopefully they can continue winning.
What do you think – what's like the most important thing and the sort of most underrated factor that goes into a winning team, like a really great team?
I think the most important thing is that players got to get along.
Really?
And Bill Walsh, he always talk about religion. He didn't want to bring religion into the locker room. Whatever your personal beliefs are, you know, that's fine. You know, you can respect that individual and do all that, but he did not want to bring that into the locker room. So I think once you iron out all of those things, now you can just focus on the task at hand, and that's to win football games and try to win a Super Bowl.
Well, I have to, because that sort of opens the door to Colin Kaepernick,
right?
Who, of course, played for the Niners, took them to that Super Bowl, was thought to be like the future of the team, and then got released after the silent protest, the taking a knee during the national anthem. What do you make of that and the way the NFL has handled it? He hasn't returned to the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the reason why he hasn't returned, but I understand what he was trying to do. He was trying to bring attention to, you know, stuff that was happening in life. And I would have not used the platform of football to do that.
You know? Why? But that is his platform.
Yeah, but I just feel like you have so many other opportunities where you can do that. And I have always stood for the national anthem. And that meant, you know, that meant the world to me. And I remember, you know, if anyone was singing the national anthem or whatever, right towards the end, you know, I would always hold my hand up just like that, because
with one finger in the air.
Yeah, it was time to play football. And, you know, the people that have fought for our freedom, I have so much respect for. But, you know, I think the thing is, you're going to see a lot of athletes, you know, express their opinions about a lot of different things now. So it's just totally different.
And so coming back to what you were saying about Bill Walsh, you leave the religion out, or you leave your personal beliefs sort of at the door, at the locker room door. So you're saying Kaepernick really, if he had asked you, you would have said what in terms of the protest?
You know, I'm just speaking on my behalf. It's just not something I would have done. Now, when you have a teammate to do something like that, you still have to support your teammate. But I don't think that was the right platform for me.
Yeah. And I think he was named like most inspiring player by his teammates.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's exceptional quarterback that could had a very strong arm. But also a mobile quarterback that could be that double threat. And, you know, I thought he had started to blossom into his own. And it's just unfortunate that he hasn't found another team.
Do you think that you say you don't know why he hasn't been signed? Of course, there's been a lot of theories about that, and that owners just don't want to take him on, you know, and maybe it's partly this age of Trump, you know.
Yeah, but I think if you're good enough, they would overlook that. So maybe they just feel like maybe he has been asked to be a backup, and maybe that's really not the direction he wants to go. He want to be the starter. So, but I'm one of those guys that feel like if your talent is good enough, you know, you're going to have opportunities.
What do you – and we do want to talk about your book, and we will. It's called America's Game, the NFL at 100. But, you know, some of the criticism of the NFL around Kaepernick has been, well, they didn't want to put up with that distraction, but the teams put up with all kinds of, you know, Antonio Brown, who was a huge distraction, domestic violence episodes where people got second and third chances. So how do you think about that, you know, disparity in how Kaepernick was treated and others who've had different kinds of problems have been treated?
Well, you know what? It's just like you have to pick and choose. I'm not saying anything against Colin Kaepernick. I'm not saying anything against, what's happening with Antonio Brown, domestic violence. That's just something I totally do not support. You know, I'm one of those guys that just feel like if your talent is good enough, now it's up to that team to decide if they want to take a chance on you. And I don't support anything that doesn't have to do with football, because, we are paid very high salaries, a lot of money. And I just enjoy just going out there, just entertaining our wonderful fans. That's just something I always enjoy, just to have 60,000 people in the stands, cheering for you. But all that other crazy stuff, no, I do not support that at all.
You were not a flamboyant wide receiver. Nowadays we have these receivers. I mean, Terrell Owens, he's retired, of course, but, yeah. Antonio Brown. I mean, there's much more of a, like a shtick, that throwing the ball, taking photos, doing the whole dramatic thing in the end zone. What do you make of that?
Well, they pretty much made it legal now where you can celebrate in the end zone. And I'm seeing a lot of that with the San Francisco 49ers. If someone scores or something like that, all the guys are having a good time. And that's just something that we couldn't do back in the day. And I remember, I was trying to find my identity, because at the time you could have a little quick celebration. And I tried to do a little dance, and I looked so stupid that I decided, just hand the ball to the official. And that was really my trademark, the rest of my career.
Yeah. So, the NFL, they used to say it stood for No Fun League, right?
Now you see all this stuff is choreographed. They're having fun in the end zone. They're doing whatever they want to do. But back in the day, we couldn't do that.
Talking with Jerry Rice, the Hall of Fame former receiver for the San Francisco 49ers. His new book is called America's Game, the NFL at 100. It's written with Randy O. Williams. If you want to join us, open up the phone lines a little early. Why not? 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You grew up, were born and raised in Mississippi. And you came from a family of what, eight kids?
Five brothers and two sisters, yes.
Yeah. And you get drafted in 1985?
Yes, correct.
By the 49ers. And so you go from, you were playing at some small school, right?
Mississippi Valley State University.
And you find yourself in San Francisco, which is different in so many ways, culturally, politically,
yes.
And other ways.
Yes.
Like, what was that transition like for you?
I was scared to death, to be honest with you. And down south in Mississippi, coming from a very small school like that, now you have to make that transition to come into the big city. And when I got drafted by the San Francisco 49ers, it scared me because the Niners had just won the Super Bowl against the Miami Dolphins at Stanford. And I was the 16th player, taken in that draft. And
they traded up for you.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure put on you. And they traded with the New England Patriots to get down to that 16th spot. So there's a lot of pressure. And when my name was called, I remember I was in Jackson, Mississippi. My brother, his wife, and myself, and one reporter during the draft. We're sitting there watching the draft, and I get the call from Bill Walsh. And I said, oh, my God. And I thought about Joe Montana, Ronnie Lott, all the great players. And I'm like, okay, where will I fit in?
Did you really, were you like, was it sort of a confidence thing? Or like, why did you think that?
No, it was like just because they had so many great players, so many legends, and the tradition of the San Francisco 49ers. And I was one of those guys that always just felt like, if I'm part of a team, I'm always going to give 100%. I don't want to let anyone down, the fans in San Francisco, the coaches, my family, or anything like that. So it scared me a little bit, but I knew I had to make that transition. And the day you get drafted, you fly out later on that evening, you know, to fly in for really the press conference the next day. And I was scared to death because I had never been on a plane.
Really? You'd never been on a plane?
I had never been on a plane because we always travel by bus at Mississippi Valley State University. So I had to somehow fight through that. And then once I got to Oakland, cameras, flashes. The second I came off the plane, everything just started to light up. I wanted to go back on the plane and go back home. But then the next day, you know, I went over to the 49ers facility, did the press conference, and then it was time to just play football.
How did you, you know, the transition, there's the football transition, but then there's also like the cultural transition. I mean, it's hard pressed to find two places more different than Mississippi and San Francisco. How hard was that? Or was it super easy? I mean, did it open your eyes to things? Did it scare you?
No, it was hard because I always been very shy. And I didn't want to be the focus of attention or anything like that. So I had to learn. I had to watch, you know, certain players, Joe Montana, Ronnie Lott, how they would deal with certain situations, you know, deal with the media, deal with fans, all of that. Bill Walsh, how he could just walk into a room and just take over a room. And I learned how to do that. But how do you do that? Yeah, I was still that shy guy. I can walk into a room and just take over the room, just be engaging.
Is that hard for you?
To talk to people. It was hard. It was hard coming, you know, from a very small city, you know, like Starkville, Mississippi. I was born in Crawford, Mississippi. Population probably 2,000. You know, coming to the big city and you just have to make that transition, and I was able to do that.
You ever go back for like high school reunions or anything?
Yeah, I go back home and everything slows down a little bit. It's totally different from San Francisco. And when I go home, it's, you know, it's a lot of fun because I get a chance to see a lot of the people that I grew up with. And I get so many compliments about how I have represented Mississippi the right way. And I'm very appreciative when I hear stuff like that because I feel like I look at myself as being a role model. Mm. And I like to carry and conduct myself a certain way. So Mississippi back home, then San Francisco, and I just learned how to, just combine both.
When you go back there, does that draw come back?
Oh, yeah, the Southern, yes. Yeah, I still got the Southern draw, all of that, and there's no red carpet or anything like that when I go back home.
Just Jerry.
And people, yeah, but the thing is, when people hear that I'm in town, they just migrate down to my parents' home, and they're always invited to just come by and say hello.
Let's talk about the book. You mentioned the draft, and there's so many things that we take for granted now about the NFL that weren't always so, and one of them, of course, is the draft. I mean, there wasn't a draft in the early years, and as you write in the book, the best players from college wanted to play for the best teams. And so the teams that were the worst had really no way to get better. And so the draft was instituted, I think, in 1936, was it? Yeah. So what – and that has evolved as well. I mean, now they're televised.
It's a big show now.
Yeah.
It's a big show. And like I said, I was with my brother and his wife, one camera guy, and that was it. Now, you know, you have players, they go in for the draft or, you know, if they feel like they're going to be the top 5 or 10 or something like that, they go in and it's a big show and they have draft parties and I had nothing like that.
And in the book, they say the owners were all against that, televising them.
Oh, televising it? Yeah. And a lot of history.
Like unanimously against it.
A lot of history, too, is that, you know, football was up in the air for a long time. And I mean, not really football's been in the air, you know, because of the Great Depression, World War II, rival leagues and all that, the integration of blacks, all of that going on. And when Randy Williams came to me and said, hey, look, We did 50 years. We did 50 moments. That was a bestseller. And I was like, Randy, no, you know, I'm not going to do another book. Come on, because a lot of work goes into, you know, putting a book out there, because you have to call a lot of people. You have to get a lot of info. You have to make sure
it's
on point and stuff like that. You have to. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm not going to do that and stuff like that. Then he said, I challenge you. He called me out. I said, okay, all right. I said, you want to go? Let's do, you know, America's game, the NFL at 100.
Yeah, which let's is next year, it. Right? You're, yeah. You kind of snuck it in a year
early. So let's do it. And you're going to find this book to be very educational. It's not just about football. You know, like I said, the integration of blacks. Fitz Pollard, one of the first blacks. Bob Marshall, Danny Washington, of that.
Why aren't those names as well known as Jackie Robinson?
That's what I'm saying. Because people identify with Major League Baseball, Jackie Robinson. But, you know, in the 1920s and stuff like that, they don't talk about, you know, those guys who made the transition for blacks just a little bit easier. So
it must have paid a price for it, too.
Yes, without a doubt. But, you know, I'm very appreciative to that. You look at everything that's happening with the innovation of football now and way back then. The innovation now is that you got, you know, wealthy athletes. You got billion-dollar stadiums. All of this stuff. So I just wanted to go back and, you know, give something really special to the people who paved the way to make our great game, you know, so wonderful.
We were coming up to a break, but Dan in Santa Clara, we're going to give you a chance to ask a quick question before we get to the break. What's up?
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. First, I'm super excited to talk with you. Total fanboy here. But part of your great success, I'm sure everyone knows, is you had this amazing, amazing simpatico relationship with Joe Montana, which makes, you know, you and that duo the best, if not surpassed. Who else would you put in that category of just a great quarterback wide receiver combination?
Well,
Steve Young, maybe.
Yeah, I also had Steve Young too, but you know, you look at Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, Larry Fitzgerald, and I know Larry Fitzgerald has played with so many quarterbacks, but you always got to have that chemistry. And I remember watching Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison doing warm-ups, and I'm like, oh my God, they were going like full bore in their route running and catching the ball and finishing and all of that. So you know, that was something that I wanted to develop, and I was able to do that with Montana.
All right, we've got Jerry Rice for the rest of the hour. His book is called America's Game, the NFL at 100. Give us a call if you want to talk to the man, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can always tweet or put a comment on Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Much more to come. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today, and my guest this hour is Jerry Rice, the San Francisco 49ers all-star, all-pro, all-time best receiver, perhaps. His new book with Randy O. Williams is titled America's Game, the NFL at 100. If you want to join us, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. And I should say, Jerry, you're going to be at the bookshop Santa Cruz at 6 o'clock tonight, Kepler's Books in Menlo Park, 4 o'clock Saturday. And then you're going to be at the Commonwealth Club in Campbell. That's Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You're getting around.
Yeah, I'm so excited because I get a chance to really hang out with my fans, and it's all about that interaction and really giving them the time of the day when they come through the line. You know, I ask people, how's your day going? Are you having a good time? You know, all of those good things.
Well, let's bring some fans in right now. And Wynn in Menlo Park, welcome. You're on with Jerry Rice.
Thanks. I want to thank you very much for all the thrills you gave us as a wonderful player for the 49ers and the Raiders. But there is a question that I have, and that is, there is always a player of some sort who gets the goat of the even the best players. So who was it in your career that one or two people who gave you the most trouble?
The most trouble
that gave me the most trouble. You're talking about, and I don't like defensive backs.
Ronnie Lott.
Going up against Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright, so many great players on that defense, it really brought out the best in me. So I would say Deion Sanders, Daryl Green, because when you get two fast guys like that, you can't outrun those guys. So you have to have a plan when you come to the line of scrimmage. And, Daryl Green, he was a tiny little guy, but he was like a gnat. He would be on you, and it's like you just want to get rid of him and stuff like that. But it brought out the best in me.
All right, Wynn, thanks very much for the call. You know, there have been a lot of rule changes, and largely because of concussions, which we could talk about. But do you think that the rule changes have changed the kinds of skills that are necessary in a player, or that teams are looking for anything different because of some of these rule changes?
You know, I think with the changes, and it been a lot of changes, but, you know, I think what's happening is that they're trying to protect players just a little bit more. You can't target someone. You can't have, a head-on-head collision and all of that. And back in the day, if I was on the left side and the ball was being thrown on the right side, I was still getting hit on the left side. So you can't do any of those things anymore. It makes the game a little bit more difficult. You notice that instant replay, I feel, slows down the game, the momentum, and that's something that I really don't like. You can also challenge a play if you think it's interference, and I had never seen anything like that. Even if the official doesn't throw a flag, if you think it's interference or something like that, you can throw the challenge.
And you don't think that's a good idea?
I don't think so.
Yeah, just because it slows it down.
No, I think also you got to leave it in the hands of the officials. Somehow you got to do that. So, I feel like, every play where you have to go to instant replay, it slows down the game and also takes away the momentum.
All right, James in San Bruno, you're next. Welcome.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. You've been discussing Jerry's amazing career, but I also wanted to comment and compliment him on his activity since his playing days. Every time I see Jerry in the papers, et cetera, he's at a charity event, he's at a fundraiser. He really has been giving of his time, and I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing for Jerry to participate in, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for that, Jerry. That's an amazing thing you've been doing.
Well thank you so much for that.
One quick comment on this passer-receiver combination. I'm going to throw out one that goes way back. If anybody remembers, Johnny Unitas to Raymond Berry was one of the first that were developed many, many years ago in the NFL as a super combination. So I just wanted to mention that particular comment. And if I could ask Jerry just very briefly, the way athletes are treated, it seems to be a little skewered today, more so than in the past, with the way, as they're coming up, through school. And did he ever experience anything like that?
What do you mean by skewered? I mean, treated differently how?
Oh, in every which way possible, meaning that anything they do is always overlooked, that they don't have to really participate in school per se, that as long as they have a good game, everything is smoothed over.
Yeah, Jerry?
That activity seems to be more prevalent now than it ever was. And if Jerry has any observations on that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I think that was the case even when I was in high school and also in college. Yeah, but it's up to that athlete to want to get his degree, because everyone is not going to be able to play professional football. You got to be able to fall back on something. And, I have done this commercial for the NCAA saying that everyone is not going to be a Hall of Famer. Everyone is not going to be able to play professional football. So you need an education to fall back on.
What do you think of this change with the NCAA? Of course, California led the way with this bill, this pay-to-play rule that's going to give athletes a chance to make some money in college.
You know, I think, you look at non-student athletes, they can get a job. They can make money. I think it should be the same way for athletes.
So the right, we did the right thing. Some comments from listeners. Noel writes, I had a life-size poster of Jerry Rice at the entrance to my classroom in the late 90s. I taught middle school kids in Oakland, and at the start of the year, I'd tell students he was my boyfriend. Most of the kids went along with it because I was very convincing. It gave me a brief moment of credibility with them. You heard a story like that before?
Yeah, it's okay, though. It's all right.
Yeah, it's a different kind of fantasy football. Yeah,
yes, it is. And you know, fantasy football now is like a, well, billion-dollar sport.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. And I used to get this all the time. When I would go in, I maybe it was just the start of fantasy football, and I would drop my kids off at school, and I had, you know, like grown-ups, like, you know, family members to come up to me, and they would ask me about certain players. You know, what do you think about this guy? What do you think about this guy and stuff like that? I had no idea what was going on, but now I know.
They were looking for their draft picks.
Yes, exactly.
Do you play?
No, I don't.
No. Okay. Here's another comment from Robert who asks, increasing numbers of parents refuse to let their kids play peewee or high school football due to concerns about life-altering brain damage. If Jerry Rice were in their shoes, would he allow a young son to play football? How many fellow players does he know whose lives have been destroyed by chronic traumatic encephalopathy?
You know, I really don't know that many players, to be honest with you, but there wouldn't be any hesitation, you know, with my son. If my son wants to play, I'm going to support him 100%. When I played the game, my mom, she didn't want me to play. You know, she felt like football was such a violent sport. And that's really part of it. You know, it's like built for gladiators. But she noticed it was something that I really loved doing. And I got so much enjoyment out of it. Who would have thought, you know, a guy from Mississippi get the opportunity to live a dream, to play for, I think, the greatest dynasty, the San Francisco 49ers, some of the greatest players ever, the greatest coach, the greatest owner, and I get a chance to live that dream.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players never get to the Super Bowl or something, even probably don't get to the playoffs, right?
And I was one of those guys that felt like you had to win a Super Bowl to be great.
Hmm. What, did your mom change her? I mean, you said she appreciated.
Yes. Yeah.
Did she come watch you play?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's like if I had a game in New Orleans, if I had a game in Atlanta, you know, all the Super Bowls.
You didn't fly her out here?
All the Super Bowls. It's like it was amazing. Like Miami, I would take care of like 80 people, 80 tickets, rooms, food, everything, because I wanted them to just enjoy that moment.
Yeah.
And my parents, they got so much fulfillment out of that.
If my history is right, I think you were not like destined to play football in high school.
No.
Right? You kind of sort of almost, it was almost happenstance that you played.
I have to tell you that story?
I hadn't heard the story. So, yeah. Okay. What happened? How'd you get on the field?
I was a sophomore in high school, and I was playing hooky. And I tell kids this every day, do not play hooky.
Worked out for you,
though. The principal walked up behind me, scared me, noticed I could run fast, and he wanted me to go out for the football team. But back in Mississippi, we got punished a certain way, you know, before. So I went out for the football team, and I was not the most gifted athlete, but I felt if I work at this, maybe I could become a starter, and I was able to become a starter, and I loved the game.
It was your speed mostly.
Yeah, but I feel maybe I was already destined for that because I remember not even playing football, and I used to run. I used to run 5 miles, 10 miles, and my mom would always ask me, she said, son, why are you running out here? It's like 110 degrees, 115 degrees. Why are you doing this to yourself? I said, I don't know. Hmm. Maybe it was like, you know, it was like Forrest Gump.
Born to run.
Born. And I had no idea that I would get the opportunity to live a dream and have so many people live that dream through me. Because I have heard, you know, people say, well, you know, you broke away on that long run and I was running right next to the television. Mm. And, you know, when you hear stories like that, is, you know, it makes you really feel good inside.
Did you ever go back and talk to that principal?
Yes. And I should have, and I said thank you.
You should have what? What were you going to say?
No, I said thank you and stuff like that. But, you know, it's like I tell kids this every day, do not play hooky.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Chris in San Francisco, welcome. You're on with Jerry Rice.
Well, thank you. Hey, Jerry, I just want to say I appreciate you as a football fan, a former player. I remember your last game. I don't think the Niners were doing that well that season, and the stadium wasn't very full. I went out, and I couldn't afford it, but I went out and I bought a ticket, and I just went, and I loved watching you. I think you made both Joe Montana and Steve Young just better quarterbacks. You know, I often tell people it's not the house that Bill Walsh built or Joe Montana's house Jerry Rice built, because you were just that good. And so I appreciate you. And I also, you know, I love both the Niners and the Raiders. So you play for both my favorite teams. So, you know, I feel like as a fan, you know,
what was
you
it?
Gave it to me. So
well,
thank you.
Yeah. What was that final game with the Niners like for you?
It was hard. It was hard because I really wanted to stay with the Niners, but it was more football in me, and I wanted to get all the football out of me. So that caused me to have to move on, and I get a call from John Gruden. He said, look, hey, you want to play for the Raiders? You know, maybe 80 to 100 balls? I said, yeah, I still want to play football. So that's why I went over and I signed with the Silver and Black. And they have a big game coming up tonight against the Chargers.
Right. Yeah.
So that's going to be big for them. But, yeah,
But your heart is with the Niners.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, it's like I bleed San Francisco 49ers. But I still wanted to play football. And you notice that Joe also left. He went
to Kansas City.
Yeah. Ronnie left, and he went to – God, I think he went to the Raiders for a while, and then he went to the Jets and all that.
How was that? What are those conversations like where they just say, Jerry, you know, you've been great. You're part of the dynasty, but
– It hurts. It really hurts a lot. But you know that clock is always ticking. Eventually, it's going to happen. It happened to the greatest quarterback ever. I call him God in cleats. It happened to Ronnie Lott, Roger Craig.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking
Johnny
about
Joe,
no,
Joe
I'm
Montana.
About Joe
okay,
Montana.
Sorry. Okay.
God in cleats. But
Joe Cool.
So I knew when it happened to Joe that eventually it would happen to me.
Yeah. And did the two of you talk about it when it was your turn to leave?
Yeah. It was sad. It was a sad day. But Joe went on to Kansas City, and you know, he was still able to play exceptional football.
It's so weird, though, to see people in a different uniform.
It really is. And also the discussion that we were talking about because of Tom Brady. You know, there's rumors going around that this could be his last year. Now,
that rumor's been going around for 5 years.
Yeah. Would he want to go somewhere else and continue to play, or would he just decide that, hey, you know what, I had enough?
Do you think that, you know, the team is ready to move transition?
It could be. So, you know, and
they should have held on to Garoppolo, right? We were talking about
with
that
Jimmy G.
The show.
You know, we are very fortunate that we have, you know, this we have a quarterback that makes everybody better.
Word was that him. Brady didn't want him around.
Well, you know, there's always going to be competition. I welcome competition any day, and I think it made me a better receiver.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and Kathleen and Martinez, you're next.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you very much for your contribution to the sport and for your workmanship and your ethic and your sportsmanship. I have a question regarding the national anthem. I understand that the national anthem was not...
I think somebody's at your door. We can hear your doorbell.
It's the clock.
It's the clock. Okay, sorry.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The national anthem hasn't always been played at football games since its inception. It's only been relatively recent. And I also understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, I understand also that the military actually pays to have people come to the games. It's part of their recruitment efforts. If that's the case, then why not just eliminate the national anthem from sports games entirely and eliminate all that controversy so it doesn't put people in a bind?
Jerry Rice, why are you pointing your finger at me?
You take that one. Because I grew up around the national anthem, even
in Mississippi,
in high school, it was always part of a football game, a basketball game. So that's just something I grew up around, and it feels a little weird when you don't hear it. I don't know, but you know.
What about the introduction, though, of the mill? Like, you have the planes flying over, the jet planes and all that?
Yeah, but see, that was something I looked forward to. I mean, it's just like Monday Night Football. I look forward to those helmets colliding together. So, you know, but it's a new generation now, and maybe that might be something that they decide to, not play the national anthem anymore.
Hmm. The owners, of course, I would say in the NFL are more conservative as a group. Is that fair to say than other, you know, ownership in other leagues, or maybe the players are? I don't know, but it does seem. I mean, if you just look at
but you look at all the other sports, you hear the national anthem,
right? But in terms of like say Donald Trump. You know, you hear Steve Walsh, you hear a lot of – Steve Kerr with the Warriors. You know, a lot of the Warriors have been very outspoken about politics. Some they and other teams have refused to go to the White House. You know, do you think that's appropriate, inappropriate, and do you think it's much less likely to happen in the NFL?
I wish I had a crystal ball that I could look into and see, you know, if that's the case. That, you know, people not gonna do that anymore. But I don't know. It's a whole different world now. And you look at the new generation of players too, how these players are able to voice their opinions. Back in the day, we could not control where we wanted to go. You look at wide receivers now, you know, like Antonio Brown. He goes from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He wanted to go to the Patriots. Then he ended up in Oakland. And then Oakland decided to let him go. He ended up with the Patriots.
And they let him go.
And they let him go. Yeah. So it's like we have never had that where you could just control your own destiny.
Yeah. And yet, you know, there has been criticism of the NFL in terms of how they treat African-American players. And
the thing is, I never get caught up in that. I was born in Mississippi. And there's a lot of racism that happens in Mississippi. My mom, my dad told me, look, do not use that as an excuse. And that was my motto. And I think that's the reason why I was able to go on and excel so much. So when I came to the NFL, it was all about being the best football player that I can be. Don't get caught up in all of this other stuff and let that be a distraction. And I was able to do some good things on the football field.
Was there some stuff that you had to put up with around race, you know, in the NFL that you just sort of said,
I didn't even go that direction because I feel like, you know, sometimes, you know, people just make excuses for themselves. And I was going to treat everybody the way I wanted to be treated. And if I get the opportunity to play a sport that I love, I was going to get everything out of it, and I was going to pour my heart into it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And John in Atherton, you're next with Jerry Rice.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Jerry, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I was curious about your exercise regimen as a retired professional athlete and your nutrition and how you maintain conditioning.
It's the same way when I played. I haven't stopped, and I keep pushing myself every day. I do a lot of CrossFit. I do a lot of Peloton. I watch what goes in my body. And, you know, I have a new healthy energy drink coming out called Goat Fuel.
Goat Fuel.
Yeah, it's the greatest of all time. But that doesn't mean that, you know, here's the deal. People, you know, they think when you say greatest of all time, it has to do just with athletes. But it's what you do. It could be a doctor. It could be a lawyer. It could be a teacher. You know, if you want to be great on that given day, I don't see why you can't do that. And, you know, that's my motto with my drink and this book that I'm putting out and stuff like that. You know, my thing is I love being able to stay busy, to be a factor, And if I can motivate people, you know, I think it's an opportunity of a lifetime.
All right, John, thanks for the call. In the book, there's a lot of like, you know, best of or greatest ever lists. I wanted to ask you, so under receivers, I'm trying to think, I had it written down. Oh, yeah, so best receivers, the list includes Randy Moss, Paul Warfield from the Dolphins, and then there's this guy named Jerry Rice. And I'm quoting from your book. Rice is considered by most to be the greatest receiver of all time. Did you write that?
No. That's pretty much Randy.
Randy did that.
And I'm one of those guys that believe that it's not about the records. It's about playing a game that you love playing. And, you know, the greatest coach. But I was always curious, too, about Vince Lombardi. What type of coach was he? The best quarterback, Joe Montana. Johnny Unitas. Just about, you know, just, you know, those guys in general.
And if you think of a Johnny Unitas or Joe Namath, you know, some of the greats, I mean, over the years, the qualities that made them great were different, weren't they? Or are they always the same?
I think it's always the same. When you see the great players, it's just something, it's something like that it factor. It's something that separates them. And, you know, you look at football today, you know, you look at Tom Brady. It's something that separates him, you know, from the other guys, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. You got to have that. And if you have that, it's going to make everybody better around you.
How much of it is mental?
A lot of it, you know, because and I joke around. Well, maybe I should not joke around. But when Dwight, you know, and
Dwight Clark,
you know, ALS, you know, took his life. But Joe, I mean, Dwight would always tell Joe, they call it the catch, not the throw, you know. So and I've sat back and I watched Dwight Clark. The way he ran his routes, the way he caught the ball, the way he conducted himself on and off the football field. And, you know, that was just something that was really special to me. And I'm so fortunate that I had the opportunity to play with him. But also when he made that catch, he started the dynasty for the San Francisco 49ers.
Jerry Rice is our guest for a few more minutes. His book is called America's Game, the NFL at 100. We've got some listener questions here. Peter asks, which team was the toughest opponents for the 49ers in their heyday in the 80s? Cowboys, Giants, someone else?
Cowboys. We hated those Cowboys. Really, it's like whoever won that football game went on to win the Super Bowl. And God, that was –
wasn't the catch in a game against Dallas?
Yeah. That was like the game where you couldn't sleep at night.
Beforehand.
You playing this game over and over in your head because, you know, we always put in the first 15 plays the night before. So you know what's going to happen the next day and the opportunities that you're going to have. So it was important for me to play that game, to visualize that game, to get myself ready for the next day.
Another question from a listener. What does Jerry think of the money that's involved in football and professional sports overall?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot more of you get so much more money, guaranteed contracts and all of that. And, you know, it was totally different back when we played. And probably,
not alone when Johnny Unitas played.
Yeah. Also, when those guys probably had like maybe three jobs or more, and still wanted to play football. But you know, it's much bigger now, but it had to do with from that era, way back to my era, and now. These guys are making a lot of money.
Yeah. Here's a question from Joe. Should fans be loyal to the team or the city? When the Raiders went south to L.A., I lost interest, he says.
That's a tough one. You know, because it's hard for me to think about the Raiders, you know, being in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, it's always been like the Oakland Raiders. And I remember when they went to L.A., then they came back. But the thing about the Raiders, you know, their fans, they're gonna support them 100%. They're going to travel with the team and do all that. But, yeah, that was hard when I heard they were going to leave.
Yeah. All right, let's try to sneak one more call in before the end of the hour. Jess in Sonoma, you're next.
Hello,
real
Jerry.
Real quick,
thank
please.
You for taking my call. I consider the 2 minutes that you, Montana, and the team came from behind by 3 touchdowns as the greatest football ever. I'd love to hear anything you'd like to say about it.
Oh, my God. You know, the thing is, doing a 2-minute drill is something that you work on during the week. It's every Thursday, and it's at the end of practice when everybody is tired. You got to be able to execute and play your best football. Super Bowl 23 on the final drive when Montana came into the huddle. I think we had about 3 minutes, 10 seconds left in the game. Everything is on the line. One mistake, ball game is over, and you lose that Super Bowl. But because we had practiced and prepared, we knew that we could move that ball all the way downfield, and we were able to win Super Bowl 23.
Jerry Rice, thank you so much for coming in. Again, your book is called America's Game, the NFL at 100. Thanks for everything you've done for
thank
the community
you.
And continue to do. And, of course, your amazing history with the team. It's very much, you're obviously beloved here in the Bay Area. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And Jerry will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz tonight at 6 o'clock, at Kepler's Books in Menlo Park, 4 o'clock Saturday, and at the Commonwealth Club in Campbell, 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Tomorrow, Mina Kim will be here. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.